wasn't cooperating this morning, so I don't have handouts for you. But our lesson this morning is about Mary anointing Jesus. And we're going to look at, we're going to kind of flip around some this morning, but let's start in Mark 14. This is one of those stories that's in the various Gospels. This one shows up in Matthew, Mark, and John. So we'll kind of, we'll flip around and look at some different things. I had a sheet here with the texts parallel to one another so we could kind of look at them together, but I wasn't able to print that off this morning. But just so you know where we've been and where we're going with our Sunday school curriculum here, and for some months now we've been using this Gospel Project Sunday school curriculum, and it's been helpful, I think, in a lot of ways. We're going chronologically through the Bible, very gospel-centered lessons, even in the Old Testament, you know, trying to focus on how things are anticipating and foreshadowing Jesus. One of the things I like a lot about this curriculum is that all the age groups are using the same thing. So, you know, we're studying this passage as adults here. The kids right in this room here and upstairs, they're looking at the same story. So, you know, when we head home and have lunch together, we can talk with the kids about, you know, what did you learn in your discussion. So I think that's really helpful. So the last quarter that we just finished was stories and signs, a lot of the parables of Jesus and the miracles of Jesus. And now this morning we're moving into the section that they've entitled Jesus Saves. So we're moving into kind of the passion narratives leading up to Jesus' death and resurrection. So that's what these next 3 months will be focusing on. Jesus being anointed, that's our lesson this morning. Jesus in Jerusalem, the Last Supper, Jesus being arrested, crucified, raised. That's what's coming in the weeks to come, just so you know where we're going. So this morning, let's start in Mark 14, and I'll read you the lesson summary here. It says, in this session, we will see a contrast between the generosity of a woman and the greed of Judas, as manifested in the account of Jesus' anointing at Bethany. In their respective responses to Jesus, we see the importance of giving him priority and honor over everything else in our lives. The distinction between these two people serves as an opportunity for us to consider our own hearts in light of the opportunity we have to express our devotion through visible acts of worship. So as we read these passages, think about Mary, this woman, and her extravagant demonstration of her love for Jesus and her devotion to Jesus, as opposed to then these disciples and others, and specifically Judas, as we see him named in the passage in John, Judas being greedy and his devotion to himself in that, in distinction from the woman's devotion to Jesus. So in Mark 14, let's read verses 1 through 11. Greg, will you start for us? And we can just go down the table here, whoever would like to read two or three verses.
Very costly, and she broke the glass and poured it.
thanks. You don't have to turn to these other passages, but just listen. I'm going to read from Matthew and then from John, okay? So just heard the passage from Mark. Just listen. I mean, these are very similar, but we pick up different details in each one. And we've talked about this in previous weeks. It's fascinating to look at an account that's recorded in multiple Gospels and just to look at the different details that each gospel writer gives. So this is from Matthew 26. Now when Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came up to him with an alabaster flask of very expensive ointment, and she poured it on his head as he reclined at table. And when the disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, "Why this waste? For this could have been sold for a large sum and given to the poor." But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you trouble the woman? For she has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with me, but you will not always have me. In pouring this ointment on my body, she has done it to prepare me for burial. Truly I say to you, wherever this gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." Then one of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, "What will you give me if I deliver him over to you?" And they paid him 30 pieces of silver, and from that moment he sought an opportunity to betray him. That's Matthew's account. And then here in John 12, here's another account of the same event. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at table. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment. So here we learn that it's Mary. In Matthew and Luke, it was just a woman did this, but here we learn it's Mary. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, "Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me." So just initially here, what are some things that jump out to you in this account? Kathy? Yeah, right. Yeah, so those things are not contradicting each other, but the account in John is focusing on the feet, whereas we kind of put it all together, and we have this picture of, you know, her anointing his head, and this oil just kind of dripping all the way down his body, all the way down to his feet, and she's anointing his feet there. An interesting experience there, isn't it? I mean, this would be pretty wild. It'd be more awkward for us in our culture, obviously. There was a practice of, anointing people as they came into the house for a dinner party or something like that. You think of it, at that time in history and that part of the world. I mean, people might not smell very good as they're coming into your house for a dinner party. I mean, people weren't showering all the time or wearing deodorant or things like that. I mean, so. You picture all these people crowding into this little house. It's probably really warm, and people are sweaty. And so to put a little bit of ointment on each person as they come in would kind of help to make a more pleasant atmosphere. This would have been, this is over the top, right? And this is, so to think of being kind of in this stuffy, hot, sweaty kind of little room, and then all of a sudden this whole jar is broken open and poured out, the aroma would be overwhelming, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. What else jumps out at you in this story? Tom? Yeah, right.
And when Jesus says, she has done what she could, she has done what she ought to be for him, but Mary almost implies that Mary knew that. Those two things, that general attitude of grace.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, listen to this. I read this in the lesson notes. It says, a rare 1823 copy of the Declaration of Independence was once purchased for less than $3 and later sold for nearly $500,000. An Andy Warhol sketch reportedly was purchased for less than $5 and valued around $2 million. A rare 1,000-year-old Chinese bull was purchased for about $3 and sold at auction for more than $2 million. Occasionally, the national news will share an epic story like these of one man's trash becoming another man's treasure. We marvel at the lucrative discovery, but we can also look with derision at the one who sold the fortune for a pittance. This feeling is what fueled the disciples' response to Mary's anointing of Christ. So, yeah, what's the implication there of the disciples in the account from John, specifically Judas is named? But what's the implication of that statement? Like, what a waste! You know, why would and notice they it mentions 300 denarii, which would be a year's wages. One denarius was the equivalent of about a day's wage. So 300. I mean, this is almost a year's wages. That's how valuable this. This alabaster flask of ointment was, and she broke the flask, you know, so it's not just like pour out a little drop, but it's break the thing, and it's totally spent now. What's the implication of that kind of negative comment? Why was this wasted like that? Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, and then by contrast, these others are not valuing Jesus in the same way. You know, she's showing this extravagant devotion and love and sacrifice for Jesus, and they're like, why would you do that for Jesus? You know, so it implies that they don't value him in the same way. Stacey? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Laura? Yeah, right.
In the one of the passages you read, it was just Judas. But in this passage in Mark, it's all of several, so many of them, you know, had, what does it say? There were some who said to themselves indignantly, and they, you know, passed their judgment. And I just listen to the discussion. I feel like there's a lot of, just even in the modern church, with this idea of reaching the, you know, meeting the needs of the poor or whatever the word, versus compromising a true devoted love for God. Mm. You know, I mean, I just see even in the modern church where there are people that are so eager to reach what, not just maybe the poor, literally, but people who don't know the Lord, that they're compromising the truth. Mm.
Yeah. I think that's you're putting your finger on an important issue here that's raised by this text. Another passage to compare this to is Mark 10, and this is a familiar passage. I'm sorry, Luke 10. Luke 10:38. This is the little passage about Martha and Mary. Okay, let me just read this for us real quick. Luke 10:38. Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she went up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. But one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. I think that's parallel in ways with... yes, we are to care for the poor. There's clear Bible verses about that. Yes, we should serve. There's clear instruction about that too. So what do you think Jesus is saying in both of these about, you know, the poor you're always going to have with you, but, you know, you're not always going to have me? Or Jesus saying to Martha, kind of like, chill out, Martha. You know, Mary's doing the... has chosen the good portion here. What do you see as parallel between those, and what's the point?
I think the point is where your foundation is. So if you're rooted in Jesus and your devotion to him, your fruit bears because of that. You're not just doing the works to get to heaven. Mm. Whereas Martha, seems like she had to do all this stuff to earn her right, you know.
Yeah, 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 well said. It's good. Mm. Yeah, yeah, right. Right?
Knowing Jesus more important
than serving. Yeah, yeah, that's good. Paul? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, right. Everyone's grateful that Martha was preparing a meal.
Yeah, I mean,
Well, it's interesting to connect these two little pictures into the life of Martha and Mary, because we have that that event there, and then here they are again having a dinner with Jesus, and again Mary is the one who's just really focused on Jesus himself, and Martha was serving again there. The John passage says Martha served. And Lazarus was one reclining there. And then Mary, you know, again, maybe Martha's attitude has changed by now, but Martha might still be feeling like, you know, Mary, what are you doing to help? Oh, you're taking your expensive ointment out there to dump on Jesus' head. You know, come help me in the kitchen. Who knows what she was thinking, but yeah, here they are again in the same company. Tom, you want to comment? But it's here. I mean, it's recorded here that anybody who reads one of the Gospels is going to come across this. But yeah, that's a great question to raise. Anybody else have thoughts on that? Why did Jesus say that, and along the lines of what Tom's asking? And also, yeah, why would Jesus single out this demonstration of love? As something, because Jesus wasn't saying this all the time, like, oh, this is gonna, you know, this is gonna be told to everybody. This is gonna be told to everybody, but he kind of singles this out. Why, Jim? Yeah, you think of the way Jesus was born into the world in such humble circumstances, in a stable, put in a manger, and yeah, his growing up years in pretty much obscurity, you know, and then, yeah, everything's upside down, and here's another instance of that. Yeah, the way he recognizes the women around him and honors them and appreciates their service to him, and Yeah. Paul?
To Tom's point, what she has done in the whole memory of her service, to me, is a contrast between what she has done and what she didn't do. Mm. She didn't do it before. She didn't want to create a focus on Jesus.
Mm.
And that's the memory that everyone's going to have, that the focus is actually on Jesus.
Mm.
Has she given that moment to the world? A lot of people probably would have forgotten.
And this is so timely, too. I mean, just the timing of this. This is, it's like Mary, yeah, it's hard to know exactly how much Mary understood of what was happening here, but it could be the case where she acted, you know, even beyond what she totally understood about the situation, but she, you know, the timing of it is such that Jesus' death is very imminent, and then Jesus ties it in with his burial. In all three of those accounts, she has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial. So this is just such a significant moment in the Passion Week here, leading up to Jesus' death, that it's symbolic of Jesus' devotion to his people, that he's about to lay down his life for us. Right? In the Gospel of Mark, Mark 8 records Jesus foretelling his death and resurrection. Chapter 9 records him telling a second time about his death and resurrection. And chapter 10, a third time, he's foretelling, telling his disciples, this is what's coming. I'll read the one from Mark 10, verse 32. We are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles, and they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him, and after 3 days he will rise. So it wasn't for lack of him telling them, but yeah, they weren't getting it. But yeah, so that is a good contrast there. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, right.
That was their way of doing it for Jesus after he left here. Mm-hmm. So I can find it significant that Mary, she knew the time was running out. She had the time to still extravagantly worship Jesus in that way.
Yeah.
She could have done that just before after he was gone, but he was there.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I do think the timing of this is significant there. So Jesus is not at all diminishing the importance of serving the poor and giving to the poor. But when he says, you always have the poor with you, and whenever you want, you can do good for them, but you will not always have me, meaning, like, I'm here right now. I'm about to die and then rise again, and then after 40 days, I'm going to ascend to heaven. But, yeah, so this moment is it's very appropriate and fitting for Mary to do this extravagant thing for him. A beautiful thing. Isn't that neat how Jesus describes it? So, yeah, try to put yourselves in Mary's shoes here. How would she have felt doing this? I mean, you picture this. It would have been all men at the meal, and an interesting meal, too. It's interesting to think about who's there. This guy, Simon the leper, we don't hear about him anywhere else, but it seems safe to assume that means Simon was a leper who was healed by Jesus, right? I mean, if he was still a leper, he probably wouldn't be having dinner at his house, or people wouldn't be coming. Yeah, he couldn't. So this is Simon, the guy who used to be a leper, but Jesus healed him, and now he's having dinner. He's hosting a dinner there in Bethany. Mary and Martha are there. Martha's serving, and this is right after Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. And I don't know if anyone referred to Lazarus as Lazarus the dead, but the guy who used to be dead, but Jesus raised him. But just think of the conversation there. I mean, Simon might have been talking about his life as a leper, and then Lazarus is like, well, I got one up on you there because I was dead, and Jesus raised me from the dead. I mean, some amazing stories that could be told at this dinner here. But then Mary comes in to this group of men there, and she, I mean, this would have been just a kind of a shocking thing all around. And then for her to get criticized for it, and again, trying to harmonize these three accounts, what we learn about Judas, it seems like Judas might have been the instigator here. He might have been the first one to make the comment, why this waste, you know? And then as he's kind of grumbling, you know, about that in that way, some of the other disciples around kind of agree with them. Why this waste here? How do you think Mary would have felt in this, Kathy? And then for Jesus to stick up for her, you know, that would have been such a reassurance there, even if she was a little caught off guard by their response. But yeah, maybe she wasn't. Maybe she was just so focused on Jesus that it didn't faze her. But then for Jesus to say, leave her alone, you know, so he rebukes everybody for their grumbling and their complaint about this waste. Why do you trouble her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. And then he mentions his burial, and then this great statement at the end that we already talked about, that what she's done will be told in memory of her. Just to tell you this outline that I had here, first thinking a woman's beautiful devotion to Jesus, and then a disciple's hideous devotion to himself. That's Judas. Just this stark contrast here between Mary just sacrificing a year's wages, and that, you know, that was probably even more than its monetary value. It might have been an heirloom, some had some family sentiment attached to it, but she's, you know, she just makes that sacrifice for Jesus. But then in contrast to that, here's Judas, who he wants to hold on to that money bag, and he wants to be able to use it how he wants to, and he'd like to see that amount of money added to that money bag. So he's just thinking of himself. So a woman's beautiful devotion to Jesus, a disciple's hideous devotion to himself, and then lastly, Jesus' beautiful devotion to his people. And so thinking how this is a preparation for his burial, that his death is imminent, and that's the sacrifice he's making on our behalf, that he's going to lay down his very life to pay the penalty for our sin. And he even alludes beyond that in that statement to her, that truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her. So this good news of not just his death, but his resurrection, and you know, that's forth in the whole world. Any last comments or observations here? We've got a couple minutes left. Jim Elliot said, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Augustine said, woe to the soul which supposes it will find something better if it forsakes you. Here we can think of Judas. Toss and turn as we may, now on our back, now side, now belly, our bed is hard at every point, for you alone are our rest. So, you know, we see Judas, you know, he was seeking his security and contentment and rest in this money that he could have with him. Mary recognized that, you know, my whole life is in Jesus, and I'm willing to give anything, you know, to honor him. And yeah. I'll just, if you look at the Mark passage, since we have about a minute and a half left here, I'll give you a couple things to chew on. The Mark passage, a common literary feature in the Gospel of Mark is this sandwiching thing, where he'll kind of tell a little bit of a story and then end it later, and in between tell it another story. So you notice that in Mark, where the chapter starts with it saying, it was now 2 days before the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to arrest him by stealth and kill him, for they said, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar from the people. And then he inserts that story about Jesus at Bethany, and then verses 10 and 11, then, what's that? Mark 14. Mark 14, verse 10 now, it says, then Judas Iscariot, who is one of the 12, went to the chief priests in order to betray him to them. And when they heard it, they were glad and promised to give him money, and he sought an opportunity to betray him. And here's, hopefully this doesn't become too much of a dilemma for you, but the timing of this event, there's might seem like a discrepancy between Mark and Luke as opposed to John, because in John 12, it says 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany. And you noticed in Mark 14, 1, it said it was now 2 days before the Passover. So there's a little bit of question there about the timing of this. But it seems that in the Mark passage, it's more of a thematic structuring of these stories, that Mark inserts that story there because he's seeing it as, you know, part of the passion narratives leading up to Jesus' death, and feels like it fits well in that context, whereas John is giving us, you know, the chronology of Jesus raising Lazarus and then moving into Jesus there with Mary and Martha in Bethany shortly after that, and 6 days before the Passover. So that's something you keep thinking about. Do you have a comment on that, Tom?
The New Testament points to this event as the trigger that causes Jews to betray Jesus.
Right. And in the John passage, right after this account, it talks about the Jews wanting to come and kill Lazarus. Isn't that wild? They want to kill Lazarus because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus. One very last comment. There's another account that maybe came to your mind as we were talking about this, but it's in Luke 7, and this is where another woman anoints Jesus' feet with her tears and uses her hair to dry his feet. That's in Luke 7:36. And if you compare that one, that's a different account. That's not just a different version of this account. That's a different woman, different scenario, different response, a lot of differences there. So just so you know that. Okay, I think we're over time now, so we're all done. Thanks for your